This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
So I've seen like a game three start after time's been called, and a guy won by casting the white enchantment that gained him three life.
Yes!
So like little stupid things like that can happen.
You should always keep a copy of fucking Healing Salve in your sideboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
Anything that costs a shit ton of mana, you're just like, bang! And they're like, fuck. How does that go? Bang! Fuck!
Jay Boosh.
And that's like the hyper angle. I never want to play in another GP again. I never want to play in another GP.
Jeremy.
And you're the reason I play Magic today. I'm like, I died. I was like just melting on the inside like that. I have inspired this kid to play Magic.
And Matt.
So I'm having this conversation with this guy in Chile about my deck, and then I'm getting pizza from a guy in Canada. Like, Magic is fucking weird.
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 271. This is KYT with three of my best friends that I hope to see in a month's time. So first off, we got Jay motherfucking Booch. How's it going, Jay?
Hey, it's going good. Booch. How's everybody going?
Hope to see you in a month, buddy. I've missed you.
Man.
Last time I saw you was at your fucking wedding.
That's only like 2.5 years ago.
We also got Jeremy in the house. How's it going, Jer?
Hello.
And we got, always bringing the content and the contests, Matt, the content Mendoza. How's it going, Matt?
Hey, pretty good. How are y'all?
Great. Heard you got a new job.
I did.
Couldn't stream this week.
I couldn't. I have an 8 to 5 now, so it's a little difficult to stream between the hours of 8 and 5. So I'll figure it out.
And you have to stream from 8 to 5?
Yeah. No.
What about streaming what you're doing for work?
Oh shit, like a live boring stream.
That would be
you already have one of those. Zing!
Oh
fucking rickety wreck.
My live boring stream still gets like 80 more viewers than yours. So
that's true, but that's because I always stream at inconvenient times.
Like never.
Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah, just blame inconvenient times.
We've had likely
excuse. He's like, oh, I can't stream on Mondays because it's inconvenient to do my new job I got. So tit for tat, be hotch.
We've had random followers ask you to stream, Jay, from time to time. It always makes me laugh.
Yeah, every single time. I love that you always dagger me. You're like, yeah, that'd be sweet if you ever watched the stream that he has done. Ask, and they're like, oh, yeah.
Got me.
Called out.
Matt, I did want to pick your brain about what you, what software do you use for streaming? OBS or Twitch?
I use OBS. I use OBS.
Okay.
So I have tried XSplit, but it is not enough better yet for me to want to pay to upgrade.
Okay.
I'm trying to stream for cheap right now. And then there are some things that XSplit does that I definitely want, but I don't know how much I need them right now. Need those features right now.
Upgrade.
I was just getting back into recording videos for ManaDeprived the last 2 weeks, started doing that, and I realized that before I paid for Camtasia, which is a couple hundred dollars if you get the legit copy, which I did, But what? Nowadays, it's been a while now that you can just use something like OBS and basically just record yourself.
Yep.
And it'll shoot out, it'll spit out a video file. So I don't, yeah, that the time that you need to, that time where you have to invest money into a professional grade, like, video recorder, screen recorder, capture recorder, isn't there anymore. And I did it through, because I'm hipster, because I'm a Google hipster, I use YouTube Gaming.
Okay.
But what I loved about that, there is some pluses to that, that it just uploaded. So if you stream through the YouTube channel that you use, it'll just automatically upload it to your channel as well. So I didn't have to do that extra step where some people would record their Twitch video or download it somehow and then re-upload that. It already was done for me. So that was nice. And I had quite a bit of feedback today from the videos that I did just the previous night. So that was sweet. And I still like doing that style where you're more focused on talking about the deck over just interacting with the audience. I still think there's room for that. It's still some of the videos I like to watch, whether it be on CFB or SCG, to learn more about the deck and not have the streamer dirtle or play other games or have breaks. I just want to see like the actual matches that he plays. So I still think there's people that still love that type of content. So that's the type of content I look forward to still producing, especially when Shadows over in Estrada comes on Moto. And I'll do some testing for people that are going to GP Toronto. That's happening in a month.
Sweet. Standard testing. That's fun.
Yeah, standard testing. And hopefully I'll see all of you there. That's the goal. With some spicy standard deck or something.
That is the goal. It sounds like it's a good time, I guess. We'll go ahead and plug the GoFundMe. I'm excited. We have hit our halfway goal. And we are at about, let me go back to the page real quick. We are at $1,026 out of 1,900. So basically we're at a point where it's real. All the other stuff, we're obviously going to be purchasing plane tickets here shortly, but we're going to keep it running because basically all the excess that we get, it's going to charity. It's going to, like, for example, if we want to buy cards, like if we end up needing to buy cards for our standard decks, it's all going back to you guys in the forms of giveaways and things like that.
We'll sign them. We'll put pubes in the perfect fits if that's what you want, whatever you need.
Okay. What's Jeremy just said?
Okay.
I've had people ask for some strange things, man.
Matt didn't know that the A-Team fans liked our pubes. Now he knows.
Well, Matt still has a lot to learn.
Yeah. So I am going to take this moment to shout out some of our awesome donors. Because of you, this is happening, and I am extremely touched that you would be so kind as to donate to this, with or without the chance of seeing us in Toronto. Like, it's great. I can't believe people actually do this. So a big thank you goes out to Andrew Malecha, Andrew Wagner, Dan
Hill. I love how many Andrews we have.
We have a ton of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew's definitely best Drew.
Yeah. Will Kroll, Rob Franken, Doug Potter. He says, I reluctantly give. Why is it reluctant? Because Matt Mendoza is the worst Klug ever I have ever seen. I challenge you to code names in Toronto. Lovebug. Hashtag Dark Duck. I will accept your challenge, Doug, and I hope we're on the opposite team. I hope you
guys are on the same
team. Eric Tremblay, Xavier Alagrucci, Michael Rosler, Jacob Schacht, Alex Walsh, Carol Rodriguez, Anonymous, Joel Clark, Aaron Rast, Jason Mung, and Eric Flynn, and Andrew Wagner, and Andrew Magrini, and Chris
Hartius.
Yeah. I think we should have like a Joel versus Andrew team draft. Because I think we have three Joels and I think we have three Andrews, if not four Andrews.
Three Joel? No, four. I think we have six Andrews.
Six Andrews? Regardless.
I'm drinking a beer that has a big bear on it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Grumpy Bear Honey Wheat from Canmore, Alberta.
Xavier didn't even think that we were giving out prizes until, like, he just found out. He's like, what? He, like, he donated 25, and then he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I think you're probably going to get one, so.
We're probably close to having enough donations to have one-to-one for prizes, I'm thinking.
Probably. Like
entries. We're probably close. I can't remember what the number was last time, but we got to be somewhere in like the 35 donation or 35 entries range, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and we updated the prize document, and we are KYT, how's that graphic going?
I'm gonna get it done this week.
Okay. We'll have a graphic laying out all the prizes, highlighting all the best stuff that includes an expedition Verdant Catacombs and an expedition Temple Garden and a huge $500-ish value Star Wars collection.
Is that how much they spend on that? Holy fuck.
Tons of stuff. It's, you want value, we got value.
Value.
What we'll probably end up doing is on the stream from Toronto, we will announce our winners on that. That way we can, we'll take some of the prizes with us, like as much as we can. But that way we can get information from you and mail out all that stuff and say thank you to you personally on the stream. So thank you again from the bottom of our hearts for making this happen. We are still shy of our goal. Basically, like I said, we are at the point of buying plane tickets. So the rest goes to entry fees, food, things like that to help us live. So, and like I said, one cool thing that I thought of is that any card that we need to buy goes right back to you in the form of giveaways and things like that. So, yeah. And that's the update.
That's actually like a pretty cool like contest, like just in general when you think about like normally when you donate to something that's like a GoFundMe, like it's rare that you get something back.
True. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Like this is straight up contest. This isn't a charity.
Yeah, this is basically like
it's a lottery.
It's like a lottery instead.
We're probably breaking the law with this.
Yeah. breaking the law. See, that's why you come to the ATV.
Okay, I did look at the new list of the prizes, and I have two questions.
Sure.
Okay. One, I see that there is a prize item that is seats cubing with the ATV.
Yes.
I see that the quantity that we're offering for that is 8. Are we doing 2 drafts, or are we going to do a cube draft where none of the 18 people participate and all of the guests draft instead?
We just watch them.
We just watch them and critique them. Oh, shit. Can you imagine if it was like an 8-man draft, and but then like we all just 8 people, so like the 18 plus Doug and like 3 other people that are just random, just like just stand behind you and critique your draft as you do it? Like, oh, he picked a red card there. That's not smart.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought that it would be...
We could do multiple
cues. It would be multiple cues.
I thought we'd be doing multiple cues. Like, I'll cube draft as long as it will fire, I will draft.
Okay, awesome. Okay, next one.
Yeah. Somebody has to operate the stream, too. So I'm imagining I'm going to be doing a lot of sitting out.
You can't draft and stream?
Yeah, bro.
Have you streamed before?
Multitask. Like,
streamed a live tournament before?
Ooh.
Yeah, there's things that need to happen.
Okay, the next one is A-Team T-shirt and toque signed by each member of the cast. What does our T-shirt look like? Because I'm really excited.
Oh, did we not have a T-shirt?
We don't have a T-shirt.
All right, Jay, who's been on the cast the second longest, added that. Should have known. I guess we're making 2 t-shirts.
We need an A-Team t-shirt.
So yeah, we'll do that. We will make 2 contest t-shirts. Time,
I want napkin A-Team logo design. I don't want anything nice. I don't want anything pretty. I just want what an A-Team t-shirt should look like with a napkin. MS Paint.
Yeah, so we'll do 2 t-shirts. We'll get the sizes from the winners. That way they're completely custom. And then we'll all sign it.
I think we should just get a 5XL. And then that's what the winner gets. I mean, it's likely that it'll fit.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God.
But then what we could do is we could just do that size no matter what. And then that way, even if it's like, if the random single, like, small person wins it, then that would be hilarious. Don't you find?
They could use it as a bed sheet.
Oh, yeah, like a tent.
But yeah, so that's the GoFundMe. Thanks, everybody, for donating. And thanks in advance for your future donations. And yeah, we'll keep it going.
What the fuck?
Okay.
This is the new pizza bet. Oh, my God. You could win. There's a link just so that everybody at home is following along. Maybe we'll get Kyle to put it in the show notes. But there's a link on some Facebook thing. I'm sure this is fake. But you have 5 hours to eat a pizza that's like the size of a table at a restaurant. You can have 10 or 9 friends help you, and you could win $250,000. I feel like especially the guys in this photo could do this.
Yeah, it looks like about a 6-foot by 6-foot pizza, I'd say.
Yeah. There's no way that they would give away $250,000 for that. I could do this by myself.
Oh, no, you can't.
Fuck. Oh, shit. That's what will happen at fucking GP Toronto's. Maybe somebody will have the balls enough to challenge me to the KFC or the McDonald's. What's it called?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Challenge or whatever. We talked about it on the show, the last GP, where it was like, double downs. Who could eat like however many double downs or whatever?
Oh, see, I can't get past one.
I
don't even think I can get to one.
I had one, and really just questioned my life decisions after that.
Yeah, I've had zero, but I feel like I'd easily eat more than one.
Okay, you go for it, man.
It was you against.
I believe in you.
It was Jeff Woods, right?
Well, I'm not going to do it by myself. If someone wants to, like, challenge me, then absolutely I'm in. But otherwise...
Okay.
Who's paying for the double downs?
Whoever loses. Or you.
Oh my God, it's a challenge to not pay the tab. That's hilarious.
So Matt, even though you got a new job, did you get to play a bit of Modern on the side this week?
I did, yeah. I tend to jam leagues just whenever I can. And jam, it's just so easy playing Magic Online. And yeah, I've just been jamming it and talking to my friends about it all the time. And I have friends who are jumping on MTGO so that they can play it. And then I have friends who are playing it live. And yeah, it's we're playing the red-green LD deck still. We're watching different versions of it pop up. On MTG Goldfish or whatever, as they 5-0 leagues and stuff. Our version, the one that's closest, that basically me and Michael, my friend Michael, we generally just synchronize our lists with each other. And he recently just 5-0'd 3 leagues and 3-2'd 1 league in the last 3 days with that deck. So
it's getting there.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. It's great. Play Magic. Our biggest change was we went from 3 main deck Blood Moons and 4 Stone Rains to 4 main deck Blood Moons and 3 Stone Rains. Our thought process is a Blood Moon is one of the strongest cards in our deck, and even if we draw multiple sometimes, it's still worth the amount of wins we get by having it in our hand turn 2 or turn 3, or having multiples when they go to counter it or make us discard it or destroy it. So, yeah.
Has, based on your experience and your friend's experience, has the matchups been the same as you felt they were when you played the deck at the GP? Like, do you guys still feel Eldrazi is largely a favorable matchup and stuff like that?
We have come down on, it depends on what version of Eldrazi. Eldrazi Tron, being that they can be even more explosive on the top end, which is kind of where we falter a little bit, is that what our general strategy is against Eldrazi is that we force them to stay in their early game, where they are battling us with mimics or with obligators or like small endless ones, even like one Thought Not Seer is containable. What beats us is when they escape, when they basically go like Reality Smasher into Second Reality Smasher or whatever, you know, World Breaker, cards like that. And then the Eldrazi Tron deck tends to be able to do that more often because they don't rely as heavily on one particular land.
Okay.
Whereas they can, you know, if you allow them to Tron, they will Tron you. If you allow them to like Temple, they will like Temple I Thought Not Seer you. They just have like a very a varied game plan. Whereas like sideboarding against Tron, you do one thing, but sideboarding against Eldrazi, you do another thing. So, and then one of the weaknesses of the deck is very tough creatures. So Oblivion Sower is actually a pretty good creature against us because it's very hard to deal with it outside of like absurdly huge bonfires or like running a Titan into it and hoping that they block or something to that effect. So that's what skews our results for Eldrazi, I feel like, but to more of a 50-50. But right now it's about I would say it's a strong matchup. We lose a lot of game ones, but we pick up a lot of games two and three. And they just have like, that's the problem with that deck, is they just have these absurd draws that you just can't beat. Like I played against at the IQ I played against, I examined my opening, any of the possible opening hands I could have had, and like one. I could only find one that maybe had a shot against the deck, the hand that he drew. You know, I mean, when they go like Temple into Mimic, into Temple, and, you know, I Thought Not Seer, and then they drop another Thought Not Seer, and then they dismember your birds. You know, they use Simian Spirit Guide to dismember your birds so that they slow you down. And I mean, that's the only thing. Like, colorless Eldrazi has a good matchup against us, and Eldrazi Tron has a good matchup against us, but we have great matchups against all the other Eldrazi decks. So, because they basically slow themselves down when they add colors. So in terms of Eldrazi, I don't know how relevant that will be post-banning, obviously. We don't know what's going to happen, but I like all the other matchups. I mean, it's basically, we're at a point where we're just information gathering. So the more matches that we play, the more information and we gather, and the more factually we can talk about the deck. And I feel like the deck's only really bad matchups, and they're not even that terrible, are Living End and Storm. Simply because we have to basically eschew our land destruction and our bonfire plans, so that, because they're just not good against those decks. Like, they don't care. Grishnalbrand is the same, similar, where Bloodboon does some work, but they can just play, like, if they just go off, they just go off. So we hinge on Relic a lot in those matchups. But I feel very confident about the deck. Had a lot of people pick it up and play it, a lot of solid results. The threats are something we're still trying to get figured out, but everybody, like, as you can see with all the different versions that are online, that are like popping up, people are trying different things. But in general, the Arbor Elf Utopia Sprawl into some form of land destruction is strong. And what, depending on where you go with it, is just kind of your personal preference. But I like the 4 Bonfire, 4 Titan version that we're playing right now. And a lot of other people do too.
Sweet. Like, I'm excited to see what it looks like post-ban, of course. How your deck is positioned. And before the show, I wanted to look through a lot of these, a few of these results with you. But of course, things are going to dramatically change. We're pretty sure of that. After that, but we're seeing some different decks take tournaments. Like the past weekend, 2 weekends ago, I don't think I went over the face-to-face games opens, the results of that in our last show. But in Quebec City, 2 Eldrazi decks were in the finals. But at the same time,
yay,
in Toronto, we had Blue Red Storm beating Scapeshift in the finals. So they're totally different. And then we had Blue Red Storm finish second at this indie at the latest SCG indie tournament, and I wonder if Jared would play Storm.
I probably would play Storm. Yeah, absolutely.
And we see in indie, we even see my old favorite, my old friend, Greenway Hexproof or Boggles, as I
Boggles.
Yeah,
is boggling.
Is boggling. I hate these. The Greenway Hexproof. No, it's called Boggles. Abzan Company. No, it's called Coco, or it's called Abzan. You know, it's Malira Combo.
You don't even know what it's called.
Shut your mouth.
Took you like 6 tries to come up with a name. It was like you were trying to make it right as you were saying it.
I'm surprised they didn't call Affinity Robots. That's how appalled I am with this naming. The naming
should be Battlecraft.
So I'm sort of glad to see Boggles back. I feel like it's an old friend of mine, and I always felt it was really badly positioned when Twin was a prominent strategy, and to see that be gone, and to keep hearing how Path to Exile is one of the best cards in the format against the speedier versions of Eldrazi, and seeing this version play 3 Path in the main, and has a bunch of weird one ofs, and two ofs. Like two Hyena Umbras, 1 Keen Sense, 1 Spirit Link, 2 Spirit Metals, 2 Unflinching Courage. And I guess it doesn't have to play, like some decks in the past had to play like all the suppression fields in the world in the main deck to be able to have somewhat of a game one game against Splinter Twin. And this sees no copies of that in its 75. I think it's probably a fine choice. How do you do against Boggles, Matt?
Well, so I actually, as you were talking, I was looking up the amount of times I have actually played Boggles online with this version of the list or the previous version of the list. I've only played it 3 times in 425 matches. I've only played it 3 times.
And did you win all 3?
I am 1-2. So I imagine the matchup is probably worse now because we've basically cut Spellskite from our deck. So it's a concession that we made, and we knew we were making it when we cut Spellskite. But our matchups against all the other decks that Spellskite would be good against are pretty good. So we just hope to like basically get their creatures before they're huge, and then Beast Within whatever one relevant enchantment they have. So it's not a solid plan, and it's definitely not developed, and we definitely need to test it more. But it doesn't feel like a great matchup, but it also doesn't feel like we're going to play against it a lot.
I've lost to that deck sometimes with that deck against Blood Moon decks just because everything requires
color. Oh, yeah, color that's also true.
Yeah, so I've been Blood Moon locked out because away from like a very seriously fatal Daybreak Cornet that I couldn't cast anymore because it's double white. So, and everything else is just one color. And if I'm not smart enough to fetch those basics, I can get locked out really early against you. So yeah, it would be intriguing for me to see how that matchup plays out over a larger sample size. I think it could be tough for the Boggles deck sometimes against.
Yeah, I was actually I didn't think about the Blood Moon interaction, the Blood Moon plan, but absolutely. Like we just have to, because even after we've discussed this with like multiple Blood Moons, and that even if they fetched a couple basics, they've usually only fetched like 1 or 2, and then you can go after their basics with like Stone Rains and Acid Mosses.
Yeah.
So you can absolutely just slow them down, and you know you may have time to fetch 1 or 2 basics, before I probably drop a Blood Moon, and that's pretty much how you can very easily get it. Just because your creatures are very hard for us to interact with, but our removal spells don't target, as in like we play Bonfire, so they destroy, they deal damage, so your Umbras are pretty good.
Right, but still, because it's so also because you're attacking
this deck in a way where it's a low land count deck. So every Stone Rain hurts this like so much more than any other deck. So I think that's a pretty good plan.
Yeah, what do you think of, because one of the things that I've talked to Dan Ward about, who's a modern player, he's a grinder, he's coming up, and he plays Boggles constantly. But one of the things that he actually did early on was he's cut Spirit Dancer for more Ledge Walkers and Keen Senses. What do you think of that?
I originally was against that, and probably still am. I'd have to play the format again. I know my original list when I top fored, or I think top four two PTQs, this was way back, but then Reduke played that in a world championships and played, I think, 14 cents. And
okay.
For me, and back in the time was when I felt I needed the Spirit Dancer to be able to race a lot of the combo decks. The only way I could win certain games, like against, let's say, Eggs or Storm or even Splinter Twin, where, you know, it's I had to go for it, even if they could tap my guy or they could do a lot of things against it. I had to go for it, and it was the only creature that would allow me to kill them within the time frame that I needed to kill them by. So that's why I had that. Okay. And I didn't place too high of a value in drawing cards, because any land you drew was probably, so there's a percentage of time you're going to just draw land, and it's not that useful in this particular deck. And I'd rather have every single enchantment in my deck be relevant. I'd rather have the Keen Sense itself be something that I really care about. And if we're in a format where we're no longer feeling that way, and where we're, because I don't feel like it's a, you're trying to nickel and dime your opponent and just draw cards and beat them. You just like crush them by having one really powerful creature that is worth more than extra cards, basically, right? So that's how I always viewed the deck. So that's why I'm more on the Spirit Dancer side. But if the format is, we feel there's a lot of spot removal, but even then, the Dancer, the fact that it can draw the card back, it's been really powerful. I've always had good experiences with it, so, and I've never been on the Keen Sense train.
Okay. Well, I want to correct myself, because I'm not 100% sure that Dan suggested more Keen Sense. I might have misspoke there, but I know that he actually cut Spirit Dancer completely for more Ledge Walkers, because you gain card advantage by them not being able to interact with your Ledge Walkers or any of your creatures, for example, except for Dryad Arbor. So yeah. I'm not 100% certain I'm on that plan, if I were to play this deck, but it definitely, I did not think about it in the context of combo heavy metagames where you have to actually race, as opposed to more control and more Jund, Abzan, burn kind of grindy metagames.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've kept it a long time just because of specifically, those combo, or even things like Tron, where you just quickly get out of Pyroclasm or Fire Spell range, whatever they're playing, and just kill them before they're able to get like a Karn or Oblivion Stone going. Because you can easily, because they can't, depending on what version they're playing, I guess, or post board, they can't really interact with you on your turn. So you can really set up a turn where you just untap with it, and it just looks like it might not be able to kill them. Like, you don't have to commit a big guy, make a swing, and then they Karn it, and then you're just dead. But you can really untap with it and deal a serious amount of damage. Usually, like, playing an Umbra, draw a card, play another one, draw a card, play a land, play another, and next thing you know, they're dead. So I've had many games go that way. So I've liked it a lot, but again, I haven't played this deck in a long time. But, I mean, this winner has 4 Scouts, 4 Spirit Dancer, 4 Boggles, 1 Ledge Walker, 1 Arbor. And that's close to what I probably had before. I still had, like, 1 or 2 Ledge Walkers because I wanted to meet that minimal creature count that I was struggling with sometimes. And so that's how I feel.
Do you think there's room in this deck for the new Buildageist enchantment?
How much is a cost again?
It's 3 mana. It's basically an enchantment version of Geist of Thingtra. It just turns your guy into Geist of Thingtra.
I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not. Just because Inflinching Courage is just
probably better in a lot of ways and allows you to race.
I don't think that it gives any sort of bonus.
No.
Just trying to look it up right now to get...
Nope, it's literally blue, white, one.
Yeah, it's target just creature make is your a... guy, Geist of St. Traft, but gives it no bonuses, no hexproof, no plus, plus, nothing, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, just the angel.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it seems like, a, like when you're racing, like, this seems like a good way to win the race in that, like, it's a flying token, right? Like, that's... and it's got a pretty heavy body, so even if they are able to block, you know, it's probably killing whatever's blocking it. But I guess with no pump on your guy, you know, a 1-1 boggle, easy to block, right?
yeah.
So,
and especially against, like, when I guess when mono red was more prevalent, that lifelink was more relevant than ever, especially if you have other enchantments, making it even more powerful.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't replace that just because Influential Courage is just so much better in modern.
Right.
Plus with when you're making a token, you're just giving them another thing that they can interact with that turns on, like in the case of Burn, for example, Searing Bloods or Searing Blazes. Like you gain a lot of advantage with this deck by simply playing creatures that they can't target.
Yeah, that's what you're trying to do, is you're just trying to shut off their ability to interact with you.
Yeah.
And like that's where I go back to your Land Destruction deck, and it just feels like against Boggles, you need to bonfire early. If you bonfire early, you have a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've decided.
And if you don't, then you don't.
Well, it does happen. Like, the Boggle deck sometimes have, like, really slow-ass draws, or they're just playing turn one Boggle, turn two.
You have a handful of enchantments and no creatures, like...
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the results, but again, it won't really matter in a week's time. And we're seeing a lot of people jumping on the Eye of Ugin ban train, and PV even mentions that as his pick. And if he says that if he sees that ban, he expects something else to be banned as well, perhaps something in Affinity. So
I don't like that.
What are your thoughts?
Affinity is my other modern deck, and I think it's fine. It's powerful, but it's so easy to like hate on, and I don't know, a competent Affinity pilot can go really far, but is Affinity really a problem? Like, look at this top eight, 8th place, 1 copy Affinity. In a metagame where supposedly Affinity is great because it's great against Eldrazi, come on. How powerful
is it really? Great against the current Eldrazi? Because I know it was great against Pro Tour Eldrazi, but I don't know, is it good against like what we now see as Eldrazi?
Well, it has, I mean, Eldrazi has mutated.
Yeah, it's mutated a great deal from the Pro Tour.
Yeah, to basically include whatever hate, powerful hate cards it needs to include to beat the decks that it needs to beat. So like blue-white, for example, part of the reason it plays white is for Stony Sound.
Yeah, so it's like the Eldrazi deck just made itself better than Affinity.
Correct.
So,
blue red, you have access to Hercule's Recall, and hell, this one that they considered blue red Eldrazi also plays Stony Silence. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
And Rest in Peace.
Yeah, we've seen it win GPs and tournaments, but we haven't seen it dominate. So I don't know.
Yeah,
are they scared that it's gonna win everything once we ban Eye of Ugin?
I don't know. I mean, that's like PV's opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like one, it's like a couple pros. There's like Craig Wesco's on the Mox Opal bandwagon, but I don't think he really feels that way, or maybe he does because of the decks that he chooses to play. But if you're going to jam white, green, hate bears decks, come on, man. Like, if you're playing white and green, you can't consistently beat Affinity.
Right.
Yeah. I really want Lantern of Insight to go, but that's just being selfish.
Yeah, so...
My money is on Eye, definitely. And then I think they go after Goryeo's Vengeance. Or maybe they don't. It's not that consistent of a deck, but it does.
No, it's not. It really isn't.
No, yeah, I know that. But it breaks their turn two, their turn four rule by a lot.
No, it doesn't, because consistent is a word in that turn four rule.
Yeah. Also true. Also true. I could see them not banning Goryeo's Vengeance. Like, I like the idea of them not, but for my own selfish reasons, I think they should. But
well, at least you're not going on about banning Thought Knots here, so you got in some sense.
I mean, I think Thought Knots here is a problem, but I don't think I want to see what it's like without I in the format first. And then, because Thought Knots here is like a way weird card that we've never seen before, right? Like, most decks, when you're choosing to be you're either choosing to be aggressive or you're choosing to be disruptive. There's very few cards that allow you to do both. Thought Knots here is that exception. And
what about Vendilion Click?
It's a 3-1.
It's aggressive in its evasion.
But it's a 3-1.
Yeah, but it's aggressive in its evasion.
Yeah, it's still like not like I don't consider it resilient. Okay, let's just I should say that. Aggressive and disruptive and resilient. Because Tide Hollow Sculler, look at that for example. It's two colors, it's a 2/2, it's two types, it's an artifact and a creature. So yeah, you're gonna be able to kill it. And it's just not gonna be able to attack because it's a 2/2 most of the time. Thought Knots here has none of those issues. Like, 4/4s are really strong. I mean, that's part of the reason why we like Thrun and why we like Obstinate Bailoff in our deck, is because they're just really strong.
Yeah. And I just, like, I'm always blown away by how more powerful they made it, just that you don't draw the card right away after getting it back, taken away.
Oh, yeah, so, no, absolutely. That is a big deal, for sure.
I'm just like, sometimes with certain hands that I have in standard, I'm just like, they just get the one card that I need to play next turn, and then I'm just far behind after it. So it's a really great card. But yeah, after the eye is gone, I think that's going to go.
I would hope. Wait, you think that it's going to go?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, seriously, it's a good card. It's a very good card, but it's a very good card. that's it. Like, it's a very good card. It's not a broken card by any stretch.
I don't think I agree with that anymore.
Well, how, like, we have a lot of Eldrazi decks in the top eight, but outside of Eldrazi, who's playing it?
Tron.
They were playing Simeon's Solemn Larkin, so it's a good upgrade. I'll agree to that.
Are you talking about Thought Knots here or about I?
No, Thought Knots here.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about I.
Yeah, no, I of Ugin's still the wrong one. Temple's definitely the way to go.
Disagree.
Yeah, 100%. The I of Ugin is fucking meaningless. The Temple is the actual card. That's the problem.
I don't think that's the case.
No?
No.
Your turn two Thought Knots here, do that with... do that with banning eye and not temple. Really easy. You put down a temple, then you put down a temple. Holy shit. I've just cast my Thought Knots here on turn two by playing two lands. You get rid of temple and you keep eye. I need to cast a land war elf off of a pain land. Like,
it makes it strong, but it doesn't make it like when I thought about this, I thought of the powerful variants that those two lands give that deck. And the problem is that there are some draws that cannot be that Eldrazi draws that cannot be beat because of I. Because I gives you that ability to get 6 or 8 mana on turn one. Sometimes you just play it.
6 or 8 mana. So we're talking about casting 3 or 4 Eldrazi Mimics. Like, we're not talking about Magical Christmas Land at all here, guys, right?
I mean, two. Okay,
like, so let's say, consistent thing? Is this going back to the breaking the turn four rule with
two to six? Two to six.
Like, again, it's, yeah, we're going to put a bunch of 2/1s onto the battlefield. Kind of a thing that Affinity does. But those 2/1s aren't really great unless we're doing something crazy on the next turn. And that's the thing, is that that doesn't happen very often. It does happen. I'll agree with you completely that it does happen. But we get rid of the temple, and it's really hard to kind of abuse that. And even if it does happen, it's still pretty vulnerable because those two ones are still two ones. But you go the other side of things. You get rid of the temples. Then I'm not having to deal with reality smashers on turn three and thought not seers on turn two. Like, that is something where you're actually accelerating that deck way too quickly, is by having multiple of these two mana lands back to back to back type thing. The Eye of Ugin, yeah, you can get a lot of power out on turn one, but Affinity does that already. Like, we've already kind of ventured into that space, and people already know that, yeah, I can just beat that with a Pyroclasm. I don't care about Mimic. Mimic gets sideboarded out in a lot of games. Like, it doesn't make the cut, because the cards that are the really crazy things are your Thought Not Seers and your Reality Smashers, and you need to slow them down. Like, if you're playing a deck that's running Stone Rains and everything like that, like, you're running your deck, it's insane that when they go first, they can beat you to the punch with a Reality Smasher. That they can be Reality Smashering you, and you could be replying with a Stone Rain. Like, that's just disgusting. With Eye of Ugin, that's not happening.
Yeah, I think, though, that the...
It doesn't even produce colorless mana.
True, and I agree with you on that. But
yeah, like,
I think that when you play it, like, it's... Corbin Hostler always said, you know, and I agree with him completely, there's a card that's the best thing to do on turn one and turn eight. How is that not, like, how is Temple the problem here when I gives you that amount of late game potential too?
Because it does nothing through the middle. It does things, agreed, does things, but it's not abusive through the middle of the game. It's abusive. It's got abusive potential 100% turn one. It does great things turn eight, but the middle of the game, it's not your best two mana option. Temple's still better than it in that spot.
I don't think so, because I think the Eldrazi decks, there are enough.
Don't think is the key statement there. You underline that part.
What you're talking about here are the Mimic Endless One aggressive draws. What you're forgetting is that there are a whole slew of 4, 5, and 6 mana Eldrazi that are just waiting in the wings to be played.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. That get played earlier when they play multiple temples.
But those hands happen so less often.
Like, right now we're arguing semantics, saying that the Eye of Ugin is more powerful because it's a two mana spell that lets you get to 4 and 6 spells. That's the exact same argument you can use for Temple. It's 100%.
But it also doesn't also tutor. Like,
no,
I
but
tutors.
You can have more than one of it.
Yeah, but who's gonna? Yeah, like, tutors, how often do people? Sure.
Yeah, you can have more than one. Having more than one is what's the scary thing. Yes, I doesn't actually tap 4 mana. It just reduces the cost. You can do some crazy things with it. But I think the temple is the actually scary shit, because that's where you start to get these things that happen well before anybody else can actually put together any sort of board position. Like, if I can beat your crazy nut draws that you're getting out of an Eye of Ugin with a Pyroclasm, I don't really fucking care.
Yeah, the problem is that because those decks can also go huge. Like you can beat one particular draw of that deck. Can you beat all of them?
Can I beat all of them? Yeah, like the later game shit? Absolutely. Because it's not fast. It's one turn faster with one land.
Yeah, I don't like... I also adds value to cards like Worldbreaker and Ulamog that already give enough fits to control decks, because they're cast triggers and not when resolves triggers. I think that's pretty ludicrous too. So.
But what does that have to do with anything versus banning Eye and Temple?
Like, because Eye allows you to tutor for that sort of stuff. It gives you the consistency.
Late game? Yeah. Absolutely. And late game, when you draw your second and your third one, you have dead cards in your hand. It's nice for it to have the ability to actually do something if you spend a whole turn trying to get your mana to tutor.
I could see them banning both. But I think Eye is the real problem. And this is where we disagree. KYT, what do you think? Or Jay, do you have an opinion?
I'm pretty sure it's Temple. I'm going to look that up right now, though. Eldrazi Temple. Gives you two... Well, yeah, I mean... But no, I'm just making sure that... Because I'm pretty sure that...
Taps for colorless, or taps for two to cast an Eldrazi.
Yeah, I'm just pretty sure that I don't want to, like... I don't want to screw them up, which one's which. Oh, man. I mean, the issue, I guess, is that, like... The issue is that Temple, you can have multiples of, which is a problem. Right? So I agree in that, like, if you go Temple, then Eye of Ugin doesn't matter, right? But you know what? To be honest, I'm not really sure, because Eldrazi Temple... Or, I mean, Eye of Ugin, like... Lets you go Eye of Ugin turn one and play three mimics, and then even if they stone rain you, you still attack them for six.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's still a problem. Like, then you're just playing Affinity. So, you're playing two decks, really. I don't know. That's an interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, they're playing two decks.
Yeah, I was
playing
I
a
was
deck that can sure go big, and you can be playing a deck that can go wide.
I was pretty sure it was Temple, and the reason that I was sure it was Temple over Eye of Ugin, because I think they're both very good, but I think what pushes Temple over the edge is that it produces mana.
Okay.
So, because you're not playing only Eldrazi in your deck, there's going to be corner cases where you're going to need to produce mana, and I think that's what pushes the Temple over the edge, because otherwise, man, they're pretty fucking close.
Would Tron play very close. Temple close. Over Eye?
Tron isn't an Eldrazi deck. Get it through your fucking head.
Yeah, that's true. Like, that's irrelevant.
I'm just asking, like, for power level, what?
No, it wouldn't. But that's
no, there, there's zero reason.
Just play Eldrazis, right? So then,
like, would it play Eldrazi fucking?
No, play. Might as well
play a would wait. It play fucking Jesus?
No, Tron plays Ulamog and Worldbreaker. Like, sometimes it plays Worldbreaker, but yeah, it plays Ulamog so, and El.
But it's not an Eldrazi deck.
But it doesn't need the temple. Or I mean, yeah, it doesn't need the temple to cast those. It's fine casting those already. So that's nothing. That doesn't, it wouldn't play it. It doesn't do anything. It's like, it's narrow enough that they would just play fucking like City Traders or whatever, that Ancient Tomb or any of those other.
No, none of those are legal in Modern.
Yeah, no, I know. Play Urza Lands.
That's the thing. It's like this, yeah, this like, doesn't do anything.
The Urza deck plays Urza Lands.
Yeah.
No, what I'm saying, what my
shocked
point is,
and odd.
Why does Tron play I and not Eldrazi Temple? If Eldrazi
because
Temple is the card that should
the
be banned,
tutoring. It
okay.
uses it for the tutoring.
Okay.
Yeah.
To give consistency.
Which the Eldrazi
in the late
do.
Game, yeah, absolutely. It doesn't need multiples of it. Nobody's arguing that I is that the Eldrazi deck is way too powerful because it tutors on turn seven. Nobody's yeah. saying if that's all that deck did, nobody would fucking care. It wouldn't get played.
Like, I agree.
That's not a big deal. Like, that is holy jeez.
I think also that,
like, if that's your argument, like, you really need to listen to yourself and realize that you have no fucking argument.
No, it's
because Urzatron would rather play Eye of Ugin over Eldrazi Temple. That's where you're going with this?
That's
like
one reason,
that's
yeah.
That's your bullet? That's your, haha, gotcha.
No, that's just one reason. That's it.
Your comeback. That was like your, now I got it. I'm going to
basically
it. I got it here. Don't worry, guys. I got this one. I'm going to stick it to him. Checkmate, Jeremy.
I didn't mean it as a checkmate. I meant it as, that's a thing. Like, it adds consistency to the late game of, like, the best ramp deck. It, like, gives you a reason to play Tron over playing anything else.
And when those decks play big, when those decks, like, get bigger, because some of those decks will switch from more of a mid-range to a longer game strategy, or when they sideboard into a longer game, the game, the team, the player who's going to win is usually the player who can keep their Eye of Ugin. It is the thing that breaks that stalemate. It'll break the board state. So when you have two Eldrazi decks banging into each other,
if they're not heavily aggressive, if they're kind of both playing like that mid-range game, it's usually the guy who in the late game in a stalled board who has the Eye of Ugin that will win. Absolutely.
Okay. So Eye over Eldrazi Temple. Got it. All I'm going to say this. There is a good argument.
If you kill the fucking deck.
That's true. There is an argument out there to ban also Simeon Spirit Guide. I think I and Simeon Spirit Guide could actually be a very interesting banning because it does prevent the likelihood of even if you draw a temple, like two temples, and you can't reality smash on turn two. So that's really, I find that really interesting.
Are people even playing Simeon Spirit Guide and Eldrazi anymore?
Colorless Eldrazi, yes, they are. That's why I'm saying.
Is Colorless Eldrazi a deck?
It is, yeah. It's the best Eldrazi deck when everybody else isn't playing Eldrazi. Like, if you go into a metagame that
so
you
it's,
don't
it's
expect...
Pro Tour, it's level zero Eldrazi.
True, Eldrazi. But metagames change. Like, there was one of the IQs... Changed? Yes. The one of the IQs that I went to 2 weeks ago was actually a perfect metagame for the colorless Eldrazi deck because there were only...
Go to an IQ?
It was a 35-player IQ, and only two players were playing Eldrazi.
So it's like my Friday night Magic tournament.
A little bit, yeah. But more competitive, because there's cash on the line.
Okay.
Cool. But I'm just saying, like, it's a definite solid metagame call. I will say that if I does not get banned, and if Temple gets banned, welcome to a world of Eldrazi Tron. So, because that's how it's going to play out.
Hmm. Does Eldrazi Tron beat things?
Yes. Yes, it does. So, because when you have a bunch of different ways to basically turn three just go nuts, that's the deck.
But, okay. So, it's like just like our red-green Tron, but it uses Eldrazi creatures instead? What does this deck do?
Correct. Yeah, it's kind of like Tron. Has the consistency of Tron, only it can be aggressive, and it also doesn't need to draw Tron pieces. It can actually just go like land eye, and then play a Thought Knot Seer, and then play like a Reality Smasher to like take your stuff. So and it plays Explorers, it plays Explorers maps and things like that.
Do you have like a link? Can you show me this deck?
Yeah, look, Google Eldrazi Tron, dude.
I am. I'm seeing literally when I look up Eldrazi Tron, I'm seeing red green Tron. I'm not seeing Eldrazi Tron. So I'm still looking. Okay, here we go. I found one.
Yeah,
I found one. A couple expedition maps. And it's not like red green, it's just Tron lands and temples and eyes.
Oblivion Sowers and
yeah, it's just colorless. It's colorless Eldrazi with Tron lands. And we're just running Tron lands, hoping to get lucky.
I mean, it's just another way to get to huge mana.
We have to go back to this consistent word again.
All right. So.
Yeah. Like, I could see if, like, this list had something to make the Tron package just a little bit more consistent. Like, I can see this thing being really fucking scary. But it just, like, I see four expedition maps. But, like, if it had, like, the green splash or something, like, in it to give me the ability to search up Eldrazi lands or do anything like that. But really, I think if I'm playing this deck, all I want to see is my one eye and multiple temples. And then maybe some Urza lands scattered through.
But that's what you want to see? The thing is you can see other stuff. Like, that's the problem, is that, like, the Eldrazi decks have to mulligan really aggressively to these aggressive hands if they want to do that. This deck, because it just naturally goes bigger, you don't have that limitation on your mulligans. I mean, am I making sense?
I get what you're saying, that, like, the fact that it has creatures in it allows it to put pressure on you in a way that regular Tron decks don't. Like, Tron decks, they're so abusive because they just carn you in the face and your life sucks. and they're very consistent at getting out their Tron lands and going Karn, and then following it up with either Ugin or, you know, eventually getting big or just jamming out Wyrmcoil engines. He's like really, really resilient pain in the ass threats. Whereas this one here, it's doing all that regular Tron stuff. It's got some big game stuff. It's kind of all over the place. It's got cards of all areas. Like, it just,
I mean, this is the deck that I'm looking at is the 14th place.
I'm looking exactly at that deck.
It obviously didn't have some consistency issues.
You do know that, like, a deck like fucking like Charbelcher can get to a top 16 in tournaments, right? Like,
yeah, I know that.
You know that I got second at a GP, right? Like, there's such thing as lucky and good, right? Like,
so I'm just saying.
Man, I forgot you got second at a GP.
You can look at the right. On the right, it says, you know, all like Eldrazi Tron lists and stuff. So
yeah, it's just, again, like, if I get rid of four Eldrazi Temple, I don't think that this deck is as abusive. I don't think it's as insane.
Yeah, it's not as insane, but it's still powerful.
Whereas, like, if I cut off four Eye of Ugin, I think this deck is actually better if you get rid of the four Eye of Ugin, like, versus the four Eldrazi Temple. Like, I would pick up this deck without the Eye of Ugin before I pick up this deck without the Eldrazi Temple.
Okay. AYT, do you have an opinion?
No, this. Like, I'm just going to wait and say it's not as strongly as I felt about eggs. So when I thought that should have been banned for game, like, I'm not surprised if, like, something happens to, let's say, the Lantern deck. Once again, not because it's a particularly strong deck, but the fact that it makes games less enjoyable, just same reason why they've steered away from land destruction spells and stuff like that. So, for this, it's either I or Eldrazi Temple. I don't really care. Just, I know one of them is probably going to go, and they're going to have an explanation, and we're going to have people on Reddit saying, yeah, whatever, on both sides. But
God damn it, KYT, why are you so reasonable?
For this, I don't really have a strong opinion for that. I'd be surprised to see Spirit Guide go, just like how, because it hasn't been oppressive in any way, but, you know, I certainly see the arguments for it. And I'm excited for it to finally come, because it's been a while since, I feel like everyone knows 99% of ban is coming, and that they've narrowed it down to a very, like, just two cards. Whereas, like,
it's one of the two lands.
Yeah.
It's one of the two.
And in Jund, it was like, oh, is it Bloodbraid? Is it Deathrite? Is it, like, you know, and then they went at it one at a time, basically. Here it's pretty obvious it's down to these two choices. You talking about you bring up Lantern and the draw again made me think about this article that BBD wrote that got a lot of comments, and it's one of those topics that when you talk about is for sure gonna garner a lot of attention. And I don't know if any of you had a chance to read it or hear about it through Twitter,
but I heard a lot of the dialogue going back.
Right on Twitter, a lot of attention was given to this, of his suggestion that draws should be worth 0 points. Instead of 1 point to discourage.
This has come up before, right? Hasn't it?
Now, is that possibly intentional draws or unintentional draws, or both?
I didn't go through it, so I don't really know. Okay. I just wanted to see if we had early. I don't remember us talking about this ever, Jay.
So. No, we didn't. We didn't talk about this topic.
So I don't know what our initial thoughts of it on the surface are. Jer?
Well, I haven't read the article, so I don't know what exact arguments he brought up in there, but I can understand that you get a lot of, like, really awkward collusion. And I've been, like, I had a top 8 of a PTQ where I was playing for my top 8 life,
And essentially how it played out was, if I won, then everybody else in the top, like in the first four tables, could draw and I wouldn't get in. But if the other person won, like I think I was playing against Eric Chan at that one, if Eric Chan won, then he would be able to bump somebody out of the top four tables. So he got like a weird pair down, but it wasn't like a full pair down. It was just a case where like my breakers were definitely the worst out of everybody's. And me winning only works if they don't draw in or something like that. Or I think I had an early draw or something like that, and that put me 1 point section down. So it was literally the case of like when our game ended, I had to like make like a heartfelt plea to the judge and to Eric, my opponent, to not say what happened. And when people came up to watch the game, if I knew that they were friends with somebody at the other tables, I asked them to like make sure that this guy isn't telling these guys what's going on in their game to, you know, change what there's going on. Because you see that type of stuff happen at these types of events where, you know, you have a friend scouting and then they see, oh, well, that game that was important just ended. The guy who needed to win lost. You guys can now draw. And like they'll just go over and tell the table that because they don't see it as outside interference. So I managed to keep silence on that whole thing. The guys played out their games and I managed to get my top eight because they did an intentional draw 20 minutes into the match when it was safe for them to do so. So I can understand where this whole getting rid of an intentional draws kind of keeps things a little bit more open and makes it a little bit, I don't want to say fairer for everyone, but it does that. The other side about the intentional draws or unintentional draws is it's a weird kind of collusion place. You know, like there's a bunch of stuff that's happening there. There's people scooping to other people. There's stuff that's happening that impacts outside of the game that are impacting the decisions. I know that you see a lot of it. Probably the main reason that he wrote the article is I know he's really big on the SCG tour side of things. And one of the things that happens pretty openly at these events is that the guys who are in like the leaderboards will usually get conceded to or intentionally drawn to in their match towards like the end if they're like not in like, you know, contention order like that, just so that they have points, like they're getting more points. They need the draw for the points. So they are doing that and guys are getting like they're being able to keep like their point totals up because they're not having to play that last match. So I don't know if that's an impact or an influencing factor, but I can see that being a factor. I think it's really cool if you get rid of the draws because we also run into the situations where you see it more at like the GPT level or maybe the PPTQ level where you have newer players who there might be in like one of their first like three or four tournaments. Maybe it's their first comp REL tournament and they got these people asking for draws and stuff like that. And they're completely out of their level. They don't understand what's going on. It leaves these situations for these bad beats where they agree to a draw and then they miss the top eight because maybe they've been lied to or they've been misled, all this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, as like the judging side of things, I think that if you get rid of the intention or get rid of the unintentional draw, I think that you actually do more to promote under the table shenanigans of people doing concessions and stuff like that. Not to mention, I don't want to be having to watch a table where these guys who are usually playing at breakneck speeds all of a sudden slow down. And it's really hard to kind of like issue like a slow play to two guys who are kind of playing both slow. Like, you know, something's up, but all it just means is that people have to try a little bit harder to get their unintentional draws or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So,
yeah. So I'm just skimming the article and he does talk about that it would speed up the pace of play and because you don't basically neither player wants to draw, like incentivizes not wanting to draw. It incentivizes playing faster, which is a real thing. So he also brings up something that KYT can speak to. One of the things that he mentions is that, for example, in tournament because tournament magic, it says in tournament magic, a win is worth 3 match points, a draw 1, and a loss 0. This style of point setup makes sense for chess, a game where the clock prevents draws, except when both players are unable to win. Draws don't make as much sense for magic, where matches continue until one player wins 2 games. Coming from the chess world, KYT,
yeah,
What's your take on draws? Not having a clock.
It's just never really. I've never thought about that because it's just too different. Because I can't imagine a chess clock system working. I mean, I guess it could, maybe, but I just can't see it happening in Magic ever. So I never really thought about that. I never really compared the two at all. And to me, I feel like I don't think in chess a win is 3 points anyways. I think a win is just 1 point. A draw is half a point, and a loss is zero. So in Magic, we're already increasing the value of a win by making it 3-1-0. So
okay.
By making it zero, does it, I don't know, like, you're still going to be in that awkward scenario you were, I think, with the lantern guy. You're just going to be like, you know, no one wants to concede, possibly. And all it does is possibly, it certainly does discourage the draws at the end of a Swiss tournament, like the final round. That's what's going to do, because they can't get that 1 point to lock up their win. They're going to need to play for three. So,
yeah, and I don't think it really does actually much to impact unintentional draws.
Yeah.
Because unintentional draws in tournaments, unless they happen in the last round, it's a loss for both players. It really is. Getting 1 point on like round four, you might as well have just lost. It really couldn't impact anything. So I don't think that really impacts anything. You just don't want to be drawing that early on.
Yeah. And I think, okay, going back to Jeremy, your example of like the smaller IQs and GPTs and stuff.
Yeah.
I remember specifically, I was kind of bummed one time because I ran a GPT at my store.
Yeah.
And the top eight was determined round three.
Yeah.
Because the top eight players decided to just draw the next two rounds.
Well, you can have, how that works is in a 32, like a 5-round tournament. If it's a 5-round tournament, the undefeateds at the end of round three can draw in.
Correct.
They can double draw in. So that doesn't really do your whole top eight. All that really does is it sets up half your top eight.
Well, I had
next people.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next people will have to play. Then you'll have a group of people who have to play round four, and then they should be able to draw in. And then depending on how your numbers are variant from your 32, like how little players you have, you only have 24, 27, like you might have one person who can get in, but it's usually just kind of a clear cut from there. Or you might have like a fifth person and there's four people who are playing for it. So you might have somebody who has to play. But then that creates that situation where if the pair down loses, then all the people who got paired against, like the other X1s, they can just draw in at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in a 5-round tournament, if you're undefeated after round three, you double draw, you get in.
Yeah, I misspoke. It was actually round four that the top eight was set round four. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, so I guess everybody else can play if you want. And sorry. Yeah.
It doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen a good chunk of the time that you can have, like by round four, you can have a complete understanding of what things are going to happen. Like, that's why you'll see standings get posted going into the last round. Like, if it's a 5-round tournament after round four, standings will get posted for a while so everybody can look at it and figure out the tiebreaker math and see who actually has to play a game of Magic.
Yeah. And yeah, but I don't know how I feel when it comes to unintentional draws, like whether people who are actually legitimately playing at a reasonable pace and they both are, and they just are in sort of like the stalemate situation. And now, whereas previously they'd be okay, they wouldn't be happy, but they'd be okay with getting that 1 point. Now it's like, well, who's going to scoop, right? There's going to be a lot of that, I would think.
I feel like you should be able to play your deck, though. I've said that a bunch of times. Like, if you're getting unintentional draws, that's a mistake that you're making, regardless of how good you are.
But that's the thing, is it's not just you impacting that.
No, of course not. But then you need to you need to call a judge. You need to play faster. You need to encourage your opponent to play faster. And like, there's like, you should be able to finish a match of Magic in the allotted time.
But there's too many variables to that. And like, the whole argument there is if you have a very fast Lantern player, I'm going to use Apollo because I'm just going to cherry pick a very fast Lantern player that I've seen play. Very, very fast. If he plays against another Lantern deck, even the other guy who's in playing Lantern might be a fast Lantern player, but those decks don't play fast. Like, they don't.
Yeah, then you should be making a different deck choice. Like, there's always something.
You should be making a deck choice based on what your opponent plays.
No, you get. There's always something that you could be doing so that you're not getting unintentional draws. Like, unintentional draws shouldn't be happening the majority of the time.
Absolutely, and I don't think that
more than the majority.
Happen the majority of the time, right. Except when you have slow players. I think it's more player than deck that actually sets up a slow player.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Like, it's not the deck, it's the player.
No, but that's what I'm saying. That's what I said. It's all your fault. If you're getting an unintentional draw, even if you're not the one that caused it, there's something that you could have done to not get that.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I don't think it's realistic, but I think it's fair.
I don't know what that means. How can it not be realistic but be fair?
I think that it's a fair statement saying that you have the ability to control things around you and that you should have the ability to kind of make decisions and do actions that should prevent those things from happening.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're going to say, hey, my opponent's playing really slow, and you're going to get a judge who just doesn't feel comfortable in their skin, and they're not going to do anything about it.
Well, appeal it. Get a better judge program. Pay them more. Like, and rally. Like,
but that's, like, you know, like, that's what I mean by, do I think it's fair? I think your comment's absolutely fair, but I don't think that it's necessary.
Oh, but I guess that's kind of...
That's all I'm saying is that there's more to it than just the ideal that we should be able to make sure that there is
an unintentional. Ideally, it should just be controllable, but obviously it's not because of bad judges is what I'm hearing. I guess.
Not bad judges, because deck selection as well. You might have the unmovable object versus the unstoppable force.
One of the sentences that I'd like to discuss with you guys is, he said, I won't dwell on this point too much, but IDs are bad for coverage and Magic's legitimacy as a respected game.
I think that's a very fair statement.
Okay. Why does it attack the legitimacy of the game?
Because people feel that games that have ties are badly designed.
I think that's fair. That's, you don't see it in like professional sports very often, and the biggest shot against the biggest professional sport that has it, which is obviously football, soccer, whatever. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to spend 80 fucking minutes watching 25 guys run around, get sweaty, score no goals, and then have no outcome.
Yeah, that's actually like worse. On like the North American attitude towards sports and stuff like that has very little tolerance for that.
That sounds fucking terrible.
That's why hockey changed, right? With the shootouts and everything, they were
tired of ties. They want to get away from ties altogether. Now, I think for the coverage side of things, my personal view on that is, I remember watching some of the early days of the Star City Games circuit, back when they had all the buys and all that kind of stuff, and people were getting their things. And I remember there being one point where the semifinals end and the finals are about to begin, and the coverage guys are like, all right, well, that was a great tournament. And it's like, well, what the fuck happened? Oh, well, one guy scooped to the other guy because he capped out his points already. So sweet. They just drew because they drew, and it was a prize split and a concession so that the other guys could get his points for his buys. So they didn't play a finals. Like, it just didn't happen. So
that's awesome.
Well, they've since changed that to where most, like, TCG players, Star City and WotC actually make you play out the top eight, regardless of how you guys split the prizes.
Yeah,
but
it's that kind of feeling where it's like you're watching somebody on like a hot streak, and then all of a sudden we could run into the situation like you were discussing. You had a locked top eight in your tournament.
Can it happen in a Grand Prix setting? Potentially. Not completely impossible, but how many of these do you need to fuck up in order to really hurt the image of your game? So that's where it's like you have this situation where it's like, oh, well, we're going to watch two really cool players who are playing for prize money and nothing to do with the top eight. Like, just,
yeah. I'm wondering if because I can tell you from my own personal experience, having covered very
much
Grand Prix, that round 15 sucks. It's
because you can't find a match. You have to sit there and you have to go up to them. It's like, are you guys going to play? No. Okay. Are you guys going to play? Like, you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off. Correct. Trying to figure out who's going to play. It's bullshit.
And then you have to move people around, and the A matchup that we wanted becomes the text coverage match, and then we have to find other matches. And yeah, it's a pain for sure.
Like, yeah, seriously, like, you are like going through the list. It's going through the black book. It's a rough night. So
yeah, I'm still not sure how I feel about it. I do want to see a conclusive winner for the most part, and I think it frustrates me when I watch, let's say, one of my favorite players, like, they're fighting for a chance and they get like this unintentional draw. They're like maybe a couple of turns away from winning, and that issue is not going to happen in chess. Either one of them runs out of time, or one of them wins, or it's a draw, but it's a conclusive draw. It's a draw because of the game state, and not because of lack of
there's no time. Hey man, you should concede to me because I'm winning.
Right, right. It's like, I mean, you can still say that. Like, I'm up a queen. Let's save us some time and let's go. But it's not the same type of thing where it's, yeah, it's not like Magic where it's not really conclusive. So that, and when you want to sort of cheer for a player to, you know, conclusively prove that either his skills or his deck is better than his opponents and stuff like that, like, these draws, these unintentional draws are kind of frustrating. Yeah,
a lot of people feel like that about that, and like Jeremy said earlier, in like a lot of sports in the North American market, like, even look at UFC, like, anytime someone wins by split decision, it's this big controversy.
Oh yeah.
You know, mostly because the criteria for being a judge on the UFC is that you don't have any outstanding child support payments. So that's real qualifications.
You know, there. That punches happen with fists.
Yeah.
Kicks, feet.
Exactly.
Yeah, so in those scenarios, Jay, I always want the fight to go one extra round. It's always how I feel.
And I don't think that that's unreasonable, that like, if they did that, like, if they said, like, there's no conclusive winner, so we're going to fucking round six it up. Like, well, nobody's watching this sport to see how technically boring you can be. They're watching it to see you beat the shit out of each other. Now do that. You know what I mean? Like,
that's the other part to it, though, is like, it's actually, there's more to that analogy to what's happening, because it's so much safer with draws.
Yes. Yes.
You start off good. You kind of make your way up there. You get yourself into the draw window and you draw your way out.
Yeah.
You don't have to fight. You don't have like these really swingy type things. Whereas like, if you forced round 15, there's a lot more tension. There's a lot more drama on the line, because it's like, this guy's done so good and it could all come apart right here. Because now all of a sudden leapfrogging is happening big time. Like, the results, you can, at the end of round 14, you can tell who's going to be in. And it's like, oh, we've got one match that actually matters. So we'll put that one on the camera. And the rest of them are just kind of, fuck, these were the only guys who are around, so we got them. Everyone else went home or is playing Commander or something, you know, like, they're off money drafting. These are the only people left in the house. We've got one in the X5 bracket, and then we got these guys who matter. But with this one here, it's all of a sudden you got these people like, It's like watching a Moto PTQ. A Moto PTQ, the standings, even in round 15 or whatever their equivalent is, and like their massive tournaments, they're still flying all over the place. So it adds to like that person who's got like that big name, like a Jerry Thompson, who maybe had a little bit of a hiccup to start day two, but is just on fire, doesn't get brick walled in round 15 because everybody in front of him could intentionally draw and block him out. Yeah. It gives you like that ability to follow that storyline of this person who's just picking up steam and they're going and they're a fan favorite because by God, we've built up 40 people for this tournament and fuck, one or two of them is going to make it in. I swear to God. So we can have that person get in. And like, that's really cool. That's stuff that you want to watch. That's stuff you want to spectate. But that's spectating versus playing. And on the spectator side, I think this is a fantastic idea. On the playing side, you want the safe entry into the top eight. If you've worked your ass off to that point there, you've earned your draw, you know, as the way that the system has always worked. On the judging side of it, like, geez, like, it used to be that two people could sit down at the table and they could make a deal because both of them were going to get into the tournament. So it was all good and that was all safe under the deal. Now you're going to have two people who are looking at each other saying, well, one of us gets in, one of us doesn't get in. I got a fat wallet. I really want a trophy. I got a fat wallet. I really want to put a trophy. Like,
when you mentioned sports, Jared, it's the same thing for people that deserve it. Like, let's say the Washington Capitals right now, they're way ahead. And the last two games, they might bench all their starters. And that's the same thing for football or any sport where they're locked for the playoffs. They're locked for their bye, let's say, in NFL. They're not going to play Tom Brady for the whole game. So
could you imagine like if you went into the fourth quarter and if you had a 2-touchdown lead, you guys could call the game at that point there?
And just say like
yeah, we win. We'll give you a free touchdown. You can put your score up another 7 points, but we get the win. Like yeah. We don't have to play.
Yeah,
this
like you get your bonus, right? You got your 50 tackles. You get your bonus this year.
Yeah, but we're not actually going to play the rest of the game because we're up this high right now.
Yeah, so. No, this is a legitimate sport. We win the game. Because let's not forget that the question was, like, an hour ago, is Magic a legitimate esport? And, like, anybody who thinks that is a fucking idiot.
Magic is esports, man.
I'm wondering if this, like, draws are worth zero is, like, too much of a blanket solution for, like... So there's two kind of problems here. Do you go after intentional draws, or do you go after unintentional draws? Or you do go after them in different ways? Because like one thing that I thought of as we were discussing this is that a lot of unintentional draws, at least in my experience, can be prevented by just adding two extra turns or even four extra turns.
Yeah, that's true.
Because like if you think about all the times that you've drawn, like it doesn't happen often. And when it does, you're looking at the game and you're telling yourself, if I only had one extra turn, this game would have been completely different.
Like, oh man, I had him on turn 7.
Correct. And that prevents unintentional draws. Now, going after intentional draws, I mean, that could be one solution. And then basically concede like, okay, so we're giving you 2 to 4 extra turns to finish your game. If you don't, it's sudden death. We cannot have draws.
Oh, sudden death.
I mean, I'm just saying that when...
Didn't they used to do that where it was like...
Sudden death is actually something that you... It is currently used in tournament Magic. Sudden death is a thing. It's used in single elimination events.
Correct.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, isn't it... Yeah, like, time's up. Whoever has the highest life total wins.
Yeah, so when you go to, like, a GP, like, and you play in a grinder, those are all sudden death.
Oh,
so
okay.
Five extra turns, then you get your... first life total change. If you have to play a third game and time's already been called, then it goes to the person whose life total changes higher or against the person whose life changes goes down. So I've seen like a game 3 start after time's been called and a guy won by casting the white enchantment that gamed in 3 life.
Yes.
Like that was like the aura. Like he went 1 drop and put that on turn 2 and won the match. So, like, little stupid things like that can happen. I don't know if I want to...
You should always keep a copy of fucking Healing Salve in your sideboard.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's all I'm saying is that...
But that's wild because I could actually see, like, the slow deck, the Lantern deck, playing some sort of one card in his sideboard for life gain just in case he gets himself into that stupid situation.
Yeah.
Or I see people playing more freaking Soul Sisters, which is one thing we do not need happening.
No.
That deck is fucking stone garbage.
I mean, we could say the biggest life total change towards zero. I mean, that's reasonable, right? Because that's towards you are advancing the game. The player who is dealing damage is considered to be advancing the game. And yeah. there's like a give and take. Basically, yeah. Watsu, if Watsu took that road, they would be like, look, we're giving you 2 to 7 extra turns, which basically means your tournaments are going to go 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes longer, but you're not going to have draws.
This,
you know, what would happen if they just said it's now fucking 3 turns and sudden death? No IDs at all whatsoever. Just like you either win or you lose and that's it. You think people would like, you think there'd be a shift towards faster decks?
Which I would like.
Yeah, so would I.
But you like, know what? I don't think that you need to do any of that.
When I choose to play an FNM, I very often nowadays in my old age and in my my more casual like, you know, I'm not playing every FNM, I'm not playing every PTQ, I'm not playing every GPT anymore. I play for fun. So I very, very commonly will just play mono red or whatever the mono red is in the format. Because I love going to a 5-round FNM and playing an hour of Magic total and finishing 5-0. Because no one is used to, you know, no one's used to the fast deck being played, or no one's used to, you know, this version, or, you know, it's kind of like what Jeremy always says, where, you know, Dredge is the best deck in the format as long as no one remembers Dredge is the best deck in the format, you know? And, I mean, I love it. I love it. I love going to fucking FNM, smashing a guy in 4 turns twice, and then just hanging out with my friends, or playing on my phone, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hate it when it's like, oh, there's 5 minutes left in the round, and 40 minutes later, the next round starts, and it's like,
oh, what, yeah, that's fuck? Terrible. That's terrible.
You know, and it's like, but, well, the, and I've seen it happen, and I, like, intentionally and non-intentionally, where, like, once time is called and there's only five, like, turns left, they slow down so much. Like, so much. Because now they have to win in those either 2 turns they get or 3 turns they get. So...
And
you know,
I think it's funny because, like, your off comment that you made earlier is it has the air of truth. And that is, I don't think that judges call slow play enough.
No, they don't.
I don't think that it is.
Oh, my fucking God. Like, I have been on the other end of that where I'm just like, yo, God, like, I'm sorry. I don't want to be rude to you, bro, but you have to fucking play your fucking deck. Like, you have 10 cards in hand. No maximum hand size, 4 planeswalkers in play. I have no cards in hand, no permanent. I'm dead, and you are taking a 5-minute dig through time. A fucking 5-minute dig through time. Put the cards, put them fucking face up. I'll let you keep all 7 of them. How about that? That means, you fucking idiot. Like, you need to play your deck fast. This is all in my head, right? So I'm like, hey, man, sorry, I don't want to be rude. I know this is a complicated, there's probably lots of, like, really complicated decisions here. But, you know, I really don't want to get a draw, and I don't think you want to get a draw, and I think you're beating me, and you want to beat me, and you want to win this game. So let's play a little faster here, okay? And, like, how many fucking times do you say that to a guy before you?
Well, and that's the thing is, you don't even have to say that. You can just call a judge over and just say,
yeah,
hey,
can,
I think,
but
and, like, even when you get to the judge, you just go, it's like, hey, I think that our match is taking long. Like, I think that the two of us are playing the game very slowly. So can you just sit down and watch and just make sure that we keep a good pace because we're on game one and there's only 20 minutes left in the round. Like, that's all you have to do. You have to call the judge over. And then you have to hope that the judge does just that.
You know, I think the other thing, too, is I've heard quite a bit there's not enough judges and they're always swamped or stuff. So, what are the odds that this judge is just going to sit at my table and watch this guy slow playing versus somebody saying, like, hey, bro, I need you to go get some water for the players. And then he has to go do that because there's nobody to do that except for judges for some reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or somebody else calls judge. And then he's just like, and then the person's like, judge, 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 because no one's going over there because they're understaffed. And then he's like, oh, I should really go over there, but oh, I don't don't really want to call these guys for slow play, so like,
Well, the nice thing about slow play is that it's a warning, but the other part to it, and it's an additional remedy that a lot of people might not be aware of or they don't understand, but if you get a slow play warning in your match, you're supposed to get 7 additional turns when you go to time.
Oh.
Correct.
It's supposed to assign...
I didn't know that. This is literally the first time I think I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, so 2 extra turns get put onto the 5 turns at the end.
Because of slow Mr. Magoo there.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So, and that's if the match exceeds the time limit. So if a slow play is called, it's 7 additional turns.
I had no idea. Although, to be fair, I don't think I've ever seen a slow play get called ever one time.
Jared's watched me get slow played by people. I think my overall opinion, my final opinion is I don't really actually care about the intentional draws as much as I repeat Jared's point of, and my point of just in sports where they're just so far ahead, they're just going to bench their starters. And as a fan, if you go to the final games, you're not exactly getting your money's worth, but they've earned it. My problem has been the unintentional where there's just no conclusive winner, and it sucks. And would I like sudden death? I actually don't hate the idea of it at all. The more we talk about it, there's a for sure a winner. And if we say an X number of turns, if it's like a fresh game, like if they're about to start game 3, then like one healing salve might not do it, right? So I'm liking this idea. I don't think they'll ever implement it because it's so far away from status quo, but I'm liking
it. So you are for doing something about unintentional draws, but keeping the intentional draws.
I'm okay. Like the coverage thing, like I would just cover the people that are fighting for that last spot. I'm okay with people locking up because they...
I love it, KYT. That's awesome. That's awesome because I think like yours is like so far out of left field to where the whole argument is.
Yeah.
I really like your impression on that. I like that.
But it's things we've brought up. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely. I don't think you're wrong for it at all. I love how like your solution where you landed in the end is like so far from it's like the opposite direction. It's
yeah.
Seeing totally. Everybody walk in one direction and you go the other way.
Because the issue for me is how like Jay mentioned probably a problem of the game's design and fitting it in the 50 tournament round, whereas again, because chess can have chess clocks and stuff like that, they don't have to suffer through those problems. So what do you have to do these like funky rules like sudden death to sort of get around that, right? To get around these issues, though you present other ones, so it's what you really ultimately favor the most. And for me, the most important thing of all this discussion is an ultimate winner per match. And if this attitude, the sudden death, like getting the opponent's life total closer to 0, encourages possibly faster decks, I'm also for it. I think it's maybe a slight flaw in the game to try to fit a 50 game match. Sometimes if you're making decks that can take infinite turns to kill someone exist, such as eggs, and that's why they pushed away from that because it just takes forever, and the opponent, unless you're Jeremy, like you're probably one of the faster egg players, right? But for a lot of people,
I'm a slow player in general, though. So.
At the PTQ level, it was horrible. It, like the game was just obnoxious to play against. So it's a flaw that deck sort of exists in a tournament where you want them to end in 50 minutes. So. So there's something that
and, you
has
know, and, like there's a definite subset of players that do that on purpose,
right?
And so, you know, like it kind of sucks when if you were to, you know, eliminate a time limit, and you know, in the spirit of increasing the legitimacy of the game and making it, you know, quote unquote better for like winners and losers, and I feel like you'd have there's a very non-zero amount of players that, you know, could then start like playing, you know, like really, really turbo fog decks or really, really like, I don't want to like subset them into judge decks, but I feel like every judge I've ever played Magic with has wanted one of these decks. But like, you know, they're the ones that are very rules complex, like the ones that are very, very like, you know, like what's that fucking card where every time you cast a spell, you instead exchange it with a spell that's stored in this thing, and then
knowledge pool,
like like a deck like that, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not a real fucking Magic card. That's not a real deck. No one should be playing that, you know. But
do you realize
like
there are two judges on this podcast?
Yes, I do. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he specifically understands that.
That's why, Jay, I like that they design these complex cards and give them like heavy mana cost to cast them, basically.
Or just make them like stone unplayable, like Hedron Alignment.
Yeah, like I feel like it's a penalty. Like it's, you know, it's like saying like, yeah, okay, fine, you can play this deck, but like, fuck you.
Right. And from the cover side, man, I could see actually sudden death being exciting. It's like,
yeah,
depending on how many rounds, how many extra turns we're giving it. It's like, oh my god, like the goblin guy to win the game to steal it from the other guy.
And like, I guess that's the other problem with sudden death is like all of a sudden, like if you do just happen to have the goblin guide off the top,
right?
You win.
Yeah.
Well, let's be honest here. How many people playing Goblin Guy decks are going to e-draw who they're sitting in?
No, yeah. I mean, that's fair.
I mean, that's like, we're talking about all these hypothetical situations, and like, really, it's the aggressive decks are not the problem.
I like the coverage, though. I could see it. It's like five turns left, and everyone's tuning in. It's like every turn is like, every life point is important. So, hey, I'm liking this more and more.
I don't know. I don't like the sudden death, but I'm 100% for intentional draws in tournaments that I play and against it in tournaments that I watch. So I'll set my schedule in and they can work around it. Although I probably would have had a lot more Magic success in the last 6 months if I was not allowed to intentionally draw, because I have drawn myself out of the last two competitive REL. No, sorry. Two out of the last three competitive REL events, I drew myself out of the top eight. So maybe we don't need intentional draws. Maybe that's actually a blessing in disguise.
So I'm going to suggest that we push our MTG SOI talk to next week.
Who's playing pre-releases, though?
Since we just basically missed the entire talk.
Who's playing pre-releases?
I am.
Yeah, I'm gonna try. I definitely like talked to Jeremy about it and said that like we're gonna play two at a giant. Not Ooh. Jeremy on the cast, the other Jeremy.
Ooh. The other Jeremy.
Yeah, the infamous
the other Jeremy.
Yep.
I am Team Trios. It up.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I would fucking pay extra
actually
to do that.
I don't think that's a format that's allowed for.
And this is why we have such contempt for judges here on the 18.
Just saying, I just don't think that you're allowed to do that. Just like you're not allowed to do
a judge being all over the fun of another judge who is illegally playing a format that he shouldn't be playing. Which, as we know, based on the new judge policy, you're supposed to be like honorable in all things. So I guess you're not playing.
Yeah, I'm writing my email to them right now.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you don't.
The content Mendoza is cheating at life.
Yeah. you don't want to deal with that.
It's pretty funny in our MTG Alberta forum, because it's a Facebook group and it's about Magic. It gets pretty trolly. And there was a guy who had posted some like link card or something, if I remember correctly, in there, like some fan made thing. And somebody joked saying, oh, wow, like this is a crazy Innistrad spoiler. And another guy chipped in. He's like, hey, man, nobody said it was an Innistrad spoiler. Nobody's claiming that. It's just a fan-made card. So I jumped in and said, well, I actually believe that this is an Innistrad. I do claim that it's an Innistrad card. Carry on, boys. I got this. And from there, one of our guys that comes up every now and then, Jared Gashadi, actually emailed Wizards to say this is a leak that I saw. Say, you know, like following the rules, saying, hey, I saw this leak on Facebook. I just wanted to bring it to your attention. And it was like some like janked up, like fan made card on like one of those Magic card editors. So,
like a 15-15.
Yeah. So, their actions have resulted in opening up a hole for them to be trolled. So,
perfect.
Okay, yeah. So I was incorrect. I'm not actually Team Trios.
Okay.
That event is next week. It is actually the week after.
For release, when release events and stuff, like at that point.
How convenient. Super.
But yeah, I am so stoked about that. But yes, I will be pre-releasing. And I'm not sure where.
Stupid for pre-release. Do you like pick a team? Like, do you pick humans or werewolves or angels?
No. I want my six packs and I want to play some Magic.
I think they're not doing that anymore, right?
Are they doing seeded packs at all anymore?
No.
No, like it's actual like six sealed packs of Magic cards. I don't pick a color or anything.
What?
I don't think that's like that anymore. And then you do get a promo, like one specific promo, or like you do get a varying
like promo, the promos
that you can play in your pool, but it's random. It could be any rare in the set. And then you just get six packs.
Right.
Yeah.
This sounds too good.
Yeah, this is. There's no way that they went back so far on that.
They give it to you in like a whole Magic box, like with a dice and everything.
Release. That's fine. I'm okay with the box and all the other shit that sits on my fucking.
But yeah, they stopped that. The seeded packs.
Shadows of Innistrad pre-release primer. I'm gonna read this right fucking now.
Because if that's the case, I feel like we might have done real work. We might have actually fixed something that was wrong.
Unravel the boosters. When you head into the pre-release of Dawn, you'll be handed a snazzy new deck box containing everything you need to build your deck. Check it out. It looks like a thick regular Innistrad.
Yep.
Six booster packs will give you the cards you need to build your deck, plus a shiny bonus pre-release card, which could be any rare or mythic.
Wow.
Good for you, Wizards. It's like I just said that.
They like took away all of that stupid shit. That's so great, actually. Wow.
Good job.
Yeah. Good fucking job.
Fucking internet fist bump.
Yeah. High five. Guy five. Which is, I guess, sexually.
Okay.
What is the word for that? Misogynistic. So maybe I'll say human five.
All right.
But, fucking great.
It's definitely sweet. I was not a fan of the stuff like you guys. I'm so happy that I don't have to pick a color. I don't have to.
Yeah.
Pick an allegiance or a guild or anything that. You
know, the main thing that I liked about it is not so much about that, like, because that was stupid. The main thing was just, like, you sit down and the guy goes, like, turn one island, and then you just know what promo he has. You're like, fucking great. I just lose. You just play to your promo, I guess. And like, that happens so fucking much. So fucking much. Where I noticed that, like, it happened a little bit less lately when they made the promos one of eight random promos.
Yeah.
But, like, so at the start, it was just the fucking worst. And then, because, like, it was like, oh, yeah, you're playing whatever this, you're playing the angel that reset your life total. Perfect.
Yeah.
So you're just gonna, I have to kill you twice, is what you're telling me? Okay. Because it'll happen. You'll just play to your fucking promo and just every time. And then, they made it one in eight promos, and it was better, but it was still pretty, like, not ideal. It was pretty not ideal situation to have to play in that, so I'm super happy for that reason, you know? And I like playing, like, I like losing because I'm bad. I like losing because I built my deck poorly. I do not like losing because you drew your fucking thing, or you read LSD.
You got the blue deck, and there wasn't enough blue decks to go around.
There wasn't enough blue decks left, and you know you read the set review, and like the only thing that's left is the green deck, and the green one's always the worst one, and I had to pick that. And nice fucking night, great work. You know, I like that. It's like, here's six packs, just randomly six packs, play sealed the way it's supposed to be fucking played. And you know, if you build a good deck, great, good for you. If you open bombs, well, that's a part of it, so good for you too. But you know what, like, most people are gonna have to build their decks properly, and I like that, because I'm so far out of Magic right now that I generally just, like, I'm back to almost like kitchen table Magic. Like, when I played in the fucking Zendikar pre-release, I like tried to make five color Devoid a thing, I don't know why, and it was the worst. And also it took me like forever to make it, and we went to like deck building time. I've never done that in my whole life. So, you know, I like that stuff. I want to be tested.
Yeah.
Yeah. Woo!
So Dark Duck.
Dark Duck. He's the darkest of
So
the
switching, yeah, we'll talk about due to time and our draw discussion and all of our other discussions, the fact that Eye of Ugin is going to get banned next week. We oh are...
I love it.
We will...
Matt, I'm going to punch you in the face in Toronto.
Bring it on.
I'm just going to punch you in the face.
Just right in the
face. Just right in the teeth.
Yeah.
Are you staying with me?
Oh, probably.
Okay, good.
Just piss right in his coffee. Okay, so I'm reading the comments for this Dark Duck quote unquote contest, and I see one entry. So I guess
so there's winner, there's winner. Two. Just a second. Two. Just a second. Just a second. I'll actually
there's
just
two.
Yeah, I got one on Twitter that
you
was
mean,
tweeted at
you
me.
Mean two because it's a flip card.
Just a second. I'm sending it to you right. I'm tweeting it at you right now.
Tweeting it now. I gotta check my tweets. God damn. Twitter. Oh, Twitter. Twitter.com. Notifications. You. All you did was tweet my name at me.
Check Perfect. The tweet that it was replied to.
How the fuck do I do that? I clicked on your tweet and it just opened up your tweet. It didn't do anything.
Okay.
Your tweet did the tweet to tweet.
Yeah, normally, like, if I check, like, if I click on the tweet, it shows me the whole conversation.
There you go.
But
it should
when
be.
When I click on your tweet, it doesn't show me that.
Are you retweeting the tweet?
Like, if I click on the tweet that's right below that from Caleb Haldane.
Oh, wow, I see it. Is this the Josh Gilmore one?
Yes.
Yeah, I see it.
Maybe just...
There's a new tweet. I just sent out a new tweet at you.
Fuck, that's like Grandpa is tweeting. Okay, here we go. I can't add my Dark Duck card image to the website, so I thought I would post it here. Thanks.
Goddamn, Mana Deprived. Isn't that a great site?
Right? It's like the best fucking site, really. Really up-to-date and modern. Okay, so this is great because he took this picture from like fucking 18 feet away. Dark Duck's secret identity. It's a conspiracy, so you already win because you know I'm going to pick the conspiracy. This
yeah.
is so great. This card must be the first card picked in the pack it was opened and must be played in every game. I like that. That's pretty fucking sweet. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a duck token onto the battlefield and then choose one. Ooh, I like that it even has the right magic language. Pay one life and put a duck token into play, or pay two life and put two duck tokens into play, or pay three life and put three duck tokens into play. What? That's OP as fuck. So you get a free duck token, and then you just could automatically get three duck tokens, and that's starting at, like, turn one. Just turn one, I just have four ducks. Okay, sweet. They don't have a power and toughness, and they can't attack, I guess, but...
Read the rest of the card.
It doesn't say that there are artifacts, either, so this is... You're losing points here.
No, there's actual duck tokens and stuff. You
Whenever
made the cards.
10 duck tokens have come into play during the game, so that's pretty poor language, magic language. Your opponent gains control of this card, then transforms it. Okay, and then the transformed side. Oh, shit. Zoom in. You are... Zoom in, fuck. Oh, my God. Everything is broken.
It's like Grandpa reading tweets.
It is. It's like, fuck. Like, how come I can't just fucking zoom in on this card? But I can't. Okay, that's perfect. Does anybody have...
Yes, you are Dark Duck. It's a conspiracy.
Oh, control all duck tokens, then... transform this card. So you just control all the ducks, but they don't do anything.
But I think that you become Dark Duck's secret identity. So then you get the Dark Duck, you gain control of all the ducks, then you flip it back over, and then you're Dark Duck's secret identity again.
Yeah,
and then
that's
10
what I,
more tokens come into play, it trains back and forth, so the ducks keep going back and forth.
And they just don't do anything.
No. They have to. You read the text.
Okay, and then the token says that they are Defender Indestructible, and I can't really read what the other part
okay,
says.
So I can read that one. So they have an ability called Sheeple. And in brackets, all ducks follow the actions of another duck. Example, if a duck blocks a creature, all ducks block that creature. If a duck is tapped, all ducks are tapped. If a duck leaves the battlefield, all ducks leave the battlefield.
That's
and
pretty
0-1.
Good. Like,
I love that ability.
He gets minus points because... of templating. So, but this is a valiant effort.
Oh, this is above and beyond effort.
Valiant effort.
This is very good. Like I said, I have to take away points because of form, you know? Like, you could do a quadruple backflip, but if you don't land perfectly, you don't stick the landing, you know? 9.5 out of 10. So, this is very good, though. Okay, all right. So then the second entry, I guess, is from Pavel Bure. He sent me a flip card, and it's OP as fuck. And you know what? I said that to Pavel. I said, Pavel, this card is OP as fuck on the comments. And he just replied with, yeah, I know, bitch. So, front side, Noble Duckmaster. It's a 4-mana, 2-white-white, Vigilance, 3-3. For 1 and a white, you can put a white 1/1 duck token with flying onto the battlefield. See, this is real magic language there, Josh. If you control 5 or more ducks, transform Noble Duckmaster. So that should say, like, if at any time or if at the beginning of your upkeep, it should be a triggered ability. Flip side, the back side is Dark Duck. It's a flying 2/2, and it's black now instead of being white. At the beginning of your turn, destroy all duck tokens you control, and then put a 1/1 counter on Dark Duck for each token destroyed this way. So it's interesting. Pretty good.
Yeah.
And it flavorfully goes with that guy, because he said he'd be like, he'd accidentally kill a duck, and then he'd have to just live with that shame for like the rest of his life. Right? And you would live with that shame with all your counters for the rest of the time that you were alive. You would have those counters to remind you. They'd be like a totem. They'd be like a trophy from a serial killer, a duck serial killer.
Oh, so, like, I get the backside. I get the backside, but the front side just doesn't feel duck mastery enough for me. Mm-hmm. Whereas, with Conspiracy, I like the fact that they actually gave the duck the sheeple ability, which kind of made it have that duck master feel where every duck did what the ducks did.
Yeah, the token itself is, like, so good.
Yeah, he sells the ability in the token.
Like and the fact that the token is like the third thing that you read, like I was reading it at the start, it was really good, and then it like kind of went downhill from there, and then I got to the token and just ramped it back up. It was like you know, you watched Lord of the Rings or The Matrix for the first time in theaters in like 1999. You just like 6 to 12, hard as a rock, but then, you know, you had to see the second one and the third one, and it was kind of like ugh. But then at the end, when they fought, you know, like the big final battle, and you're like, yeah, that's what it was like. Ooh,
see, whereas like with the Conspiracy, what I would have done is I would have added another line of text that says, whenever a duck comes into play, put a duck, like a charge, some sort of charge counter, a duck counter on this Conspiracy. Yeah. And when 10 counters on the Conspiracy, then you do the bullshit.
Yeah.
Just to make it fit with templating.
I don't know if you can put charge counters on Conspiracies, though. I don't know if you can interact with them. That's the other
Conspiracies are not real magic cards.
That's what I'm saying. So you still have to keep it tight, bro.
Yeah, I think that's tight. You put like fucking written words on magic cards.
I wasn't ready for this. I was ready for just like one person entering the contest. They win. Fuck it.
I'm going to say that you're going to make the decision. I'm really tickled by the sheeple ability.
Oh, it's so good.
It sounds so fun.
It sounds so fun, actually.
Yeah, my meaningless lot is thrown behind the Conspiracy.
Yeah. It's so good. Like, this is the terrible superpower. This is the terrible superpower. This is it. This is like, you can't, you know, if you were trying to make it flavorful, like, this is a home run. It has to be. This guy wins. Josh Gilmore, you win. Silent Velcro. This is the best. I'm going to put this in my commander set that I'm designing, which I didn't get to talk about on the show. Everybody was complaining about fucking Eye of Temple. But you better give
it the designer credit.
This is going to go in there. This card is too fun to not put in a set and have like Angry Simon have to deal with this card. He will just rip it in half and say it doesn't count.
I like it because it's like, it's kind of precursor imagey. You know, where like if they like bounce one of your tokens, all of your tokens are bounced.
Yeah.
But like all the tokens have to block the same creature, or all of them have to attack for like 0.
Yeah. Or like you fucking gain control of one, gain control of all of them. So you could, like, blow them out by, like, making them all basically not be blocked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you threaten one duck and they're all threatened.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This card's super good. Yeah, Josh wins. I mean, Pavel, you did a good job and you put in a lot of effort. I like it. But it's not, it's obviously not as good as this fucking here. This is so good. So good. Oh, yeah, I like this card a lot. Thank you, Josh.
Cool.
Thank you, Alan Velcro. You win something.
Josh, if you send me your mailing information at to mattjmendoza@gmail.com, I will send out a new a playmat for you. And I don't really have much else, so we can just wait for Jay to get back to close the show if you guys want. We're at 2 hours.
I think we need to go another hour. I actually have to start a draft or something. So
sudden death. So we need sudden death.
I would like to at some point talk about, like, the idea that Magic Online, because and Magic Paper are just completely different games. Like, and competitively, you have to decide which one you want people to compete in, because I don't think it's fair to the people who play Paper Magic that Magic Online players get to play Magic Online for competitive reasons, for competitive things, and vice versa. And then you have the both things feed the Pro Tour. Like, I don't know if you guys feel differently about that, but I definitely
I don't think the crossover is that impressive.
What do you mean?
Like I think that it's not a lot of Pro Tour spots are done by Magic Online people, and I'd rather Magic Online people be going to the Pro Tour than, like, the weird invites that they used to give out. Most notably, like, the Day 9 invite. Like, I understand why he got invited to the Pro Tour, but really, did he have any place being there? No. Magic Online is still Magic, but it doesn't account for a large population of players at the Pro Tour. I think it's only, like, 16 invites, if that. So that's a rather small group of players that go based off of Magic Online.
Okay.
And then on the vice versa, you are now giving, like, platinum players and that kind of stuff invites to, or ways to get into the mocks, if I recall correctly. Like, they can bypass the
yeah, they're pre-qualified for the mocks.
Yeah, they're pre-qualified for mocks, so they don't have to, like, get their points or whatever like that. So yeah, I understand. You're right that the games play out a little bit different. A big example of where they play out different is the thing we talked about today. No such thing as an intentional draw on Magic Online. Doesn't happen. Can't happen. So Magic Online is what no draw Magic looks like.
Yep. Well, Jay, we were going to wait till you get back to sign off.
Oh, sure. Like, this is not on the show?
No. We're a little over 2 hours.
Just so. Do your bye! Cool.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to just come back for. I, like, realized that I was, like, leaving right as we were going to do that anyway, but then I was, like, going to piss my pants.
Oh, yeah. So here we go. I forgot our contest for this week. So basically, it's going to be super simple. As you go to the pre-releases and stuff, tweet out pictures of your deck if you can, or just, like, a card that you're particularly excited that you open to us. Or email them to us, or post them in the comments. Use the hashtag SOIAteam if you can. That way we know how to find them very easily on Twitter, regardless of whether you tweet them out just into the ether or whether you tweet them at us. And we'll pick the winner of next week's contest out from the people who send us images. We mostly want decks, because that helps us. Like, if you tell us your deck and then your record, it helps us kind of, we all gain more information.
Well, yeah, about the for format. Sure.
But we understand that, like, you're tired after pre-release or whatever, and if you forget, like, that's fine.
Yeah, especially if you're doing, like, a midnight event.
Yeah. Ugh, jeez. Midnight Magic tournaments.
Man, I don't miss those.
Yeah.
Not one bit.
I miss only playing four rounds. I don't know why.
Yeah, like, me too.
There's been a ton of places that switch to like playing a whole event. And one of the things that I really liked about the old place that I used to pre-release, the TO that I used to pre-release under back when they had regional TOs, is he just basically ran four round flights and paid out based on your record. And you ran them all weekend.
That would be sweet.
Yeah. And I'm always like, nobody wants to play round five at 4:30 in the morning. Come on. No. Let's just go home. Anyway.
All right, bye.
Bye.
I love you all.
Bye, guys.